the legends. You who poisoned all of my dreams. You who pinned all of the medals on all the boys from Omaha Beach. Hope you haven't got too lazy. I know you like your apple pie. Cause the working poor you've been pissing on are doing double shifts tonight. What could, what?
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Alan Ziabrowski, who's a professor of business at the J. Mack Robinson College of Business at Georgia State University, where he specializes in investments of federal government officials. He is a member of the American Real Estate Society, of the American Real Estate and Urban Economics Association, and of the Financial Management Association. Welcome to Background Briefing, Professor Ziabrowski.
Thank you.
And 60 Minutes did a piece on the exemption that the Congress has from insider trading, which they have profited from. Some of the examples in the 60 Minute piece were quite shocking. I imagine it's going to create a kind of backlash. You have been studying investments of federal government officials for some time. Why is it that more notice hasn't been paid to this? I guess it's taken 60 Minutes to wake people up.
No idea, actually. It's a phenomenon that I can't quite explain. We got quite a bit of publicity back in 2004 when we talked about the U.S. Senate, but nobody's out there listening.
Well, perhaps they are now. Give us an idea of the disparity between what ordinary mere mortals like you and I have in terms of the information we might have in terms of investing in stocks and what the Congress has access to and how they act on it. Give us a sense of how much better they do than the rest of us.
In terms of the information that they have, basically Congress is preoccupied with three issues: regulation, taxation, and also the federal budget. And what happens is, of course, that they're the first ones to know when these laws are likely to change. These changes in the law can have a profound impact on corporate profitability, and as a result, it can make a significant difference on how stock performance is. So the result is that clearly, they have access to information about law changes, et cetera, that are going to have a tremendous impact on these stocks, and they're legally allowed to trade on that information.
Well, that's what's so extraordinary, that it's not illegal for members of Congress to buy stocks or make land deals based on information they're privy to because of their positions. Give us a sense of the kind of profits that they're making.
Our study showed that basically senators, over the period that we looked at, they were able to make about 1% a month more than the market. That's about 12% a year. House members, about half that much. So that's a substantial amount of money over a prolonged period of time.
And given, Professor Ziabrowski, that you have studied investments of federal government officials and you're an expert in real estate, give us a sense of the kind of real estate holdings they have. Because one of the things that came out in the 60 Minutes piece is that the former speaker, Dennis Hastert, was able to, through an earmark, to buy property on a freeway that hadn't been built, presumably the federal government was financing. So he had insider knowledge of where the off-ramps would be, et cetera. And apparently that's a common practice. We have a congressman out here who's a realtor in Riverside, California, and he's still in the real estate business, and he's been making money the same way. So how common is this practice of earmarking, knowing that property values will shoot up and being able to corner the market before anybody even knows about it?
I would be way out of my league to tell you who exactly is doing what to whom. It's very, very difficult to track real estate transactions and then find out who did what to who. It's important to realize that a lot of these deals and earmarks find themselves into pieces of legislation that have absolutely nothing to do with the topic of the legislation. I've always, one of my classic examples is how when they did the cash for clunkers deal, they hid that in a defense bill. And you just, you know, that's the way the legislation is written. Frequently, it has nothing to do with the topic. But it's almost impossible to keep track of how much money or which transactions are which.
So in terms of the other example that was given in the 60 Minutes expose on insider trading in the Congress, Spencer Baucus from Alabama, congressman, he was in on the very critical meetings at the time of the 2008 crash, where apparently those in the meeting were asked to surrender their BlackBerries and cell phones. And the minute the meeting was over, he was able to make trades, essentially shorting the United States. I mean, he was shorting companies that he knew from this information that he'd just gotten from the Secretary of Treasury, Hank Paulson, and from Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Fed, whether Lehman and the others were going to go down and who were going to be the winners and who are they going to be the losers. From a business point of view, that's the kind of information that investors would salivate over, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And there are hedge funds right now that are making a living by crawling around the halls of Congress trying to pick up little tidbits of information so that they can trade on it.
And this is all perfectly legal, right?
All perfectly legal. There's absolutely nothing illegal about it. Because the key issue here is, technically speaking, changes in the law are not inside information. Inside information, of course, is stuff that goes inside corporations when corporate people trade on their own stock. This is technically information that's about the public's business, and there's absolutely nothing in the law that prohibits them from trading on that information.
Well, I recall, though, some years back, Professor Zebrowski, during the Reagan administration, when Bill Casey was about to be made the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, that he had to put all of his holdings, he came from Wall Street, he had to put his holdings in a blind trust. And the explanation was a fairly logical one, is if you're in charge of the CIA, you get an awful lot of information that as an investor that you could act on and make a killing. So why is it that executive branch of people required to put their holdings into a blind trust and not the legislative branch people?
Because the Congress makes the laws and they don't want to legislate themselves into that kind of a corner.
That simple, eh?
Yeah, it's that simple.
So in the research that you did on the investments of federal government officials, what are the most egregious things that you discovered?
I know this isn't particularly sexy, but the fact of the matter is that we tried our best to do what we called an unbiased analysis. We didn't look for, if you want to call it, egregious cases. We treated everybody as equals, and we simply looked at a portfolio that was created, if you will, by the senators' transactions. So we looked at them all at one time. So we weren't really looking to do an expose of people that, my job is not to be like 60 Minutes. My job is to do real hardcore academic research. And so we didn't look for cases like you've just described.
But what did you find, though, nevertheless?
Again, we found that the senators collectively made an awful lot more money than the average guy. And by what we call a statistically significant margin, in other words, there's a very, very small chance, less than 1%, that they were able to do that on pure luck alone. From that, we concluded that they had what we call an informational advantage, meaning that they knew things were going to happen before they actually happened.
Well, we know that from the 60 Minutes piece, that was the case with Spencer Baucus. I mean,
absolutely.
So what does this come down to then? I mean, if, you know, obviously it's a case of putting Dracula in charge of the blood bank in terms of expecting the Congress to regulate themselves. But we know from the politics of the moment with the Tea Party on the right and the Occupy movement on the left that there's a tremendous dissatisfaction with government. Do you think that these recent revelations from 60 Minutes are going to create enough heat for the Congress to change its ways?
I certainly hope so. I think a decent place to start is with the passage of the Stock Act. Shortly after we did our paper.
By the way, can you tell our audience how they can get hold of your paper?
It's actually on the internet. You can find it. Just go to my name and look around for it. You'll find it.
Ziobrowski, Ziobrowski.
correct.
So go ahead, now, sorry.
Anyway, a good place to start would be with the passage of the Stock Act. It was introduced shortly after our paper came out. Unfortunately, they couldn't get any sponsors for it, or very few sponsors for it, as you can imagine. And in addition to that, they had a committee meeting, but it died there. There were only two people there. I testified before the committee. The Stock Act, what its basic purpose is basically it makes it illegal for them to trade on information that they obtain as part of their government duties. It also covers their staff, and it also requires disclosure of their stock transactions so that at least the marketplace could decide. In other words, we could be watching the activities of somebody like Baucus.
Well, the Stock Act, I think the congressman who tried to carry the bill from Washington State, he was able to find, what, five other Congress members to sign on with him?
That's a sad commentary, isn't it?
Well, it is a sad commentary, but I think, didn't the congressman also resign? Was his resignation from Congress a response to his disappointment in his colleagues?
I can't speak to why he resigned, but it certainly, when we talked to him, he was at that committee hearing, and we talked to him, and certainly he was a frustrated man even then.
Well, one of the things that, of course, that was evident from the 60 Minutes piece was when they ambush interviewed the congressman as they were going down the steps of the Capitol, they all looked like deers in the headlights. You know, they'd never heard of it. So now that they've heard of it, what do you think's going to happen?
Well, again, my first inclination is they're going to wait and see if the storm blows over. If it does blow over, nothing's going to happen. I hope that the American people put some pressure on them to get this thing to go.
And the Stock Act itself, it sort of languishes, but it's there all the time, right? It's in the hopper, as you might say.
It's buried deep in the hopper right now, and the key is to revive it.
So what would your parting advice be for citizens who were outraged by the 60 Minutes piece? What is just in the context of outrage, the approval rating of Congress isn't it an all-time record low?
I believe it is, and the recommendation I have for people would be call your congressman, write your congressman, because they tell me they listen to that stuff, and I think the more irate the public becomes, the better off we're all going to be.
And the simple message would be to get aboard the Stock Act and make it law.
Exactly.
Well, I thank you for joining us, and I thank you for the early work that you did on this subject that now is getting a little attention.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Alan Zebrowski, who's a professor of business at the J. Mack Robinson College of Business at Georgia State University, where he specializes in investments of federal government officials. He's a member of the American Real Estate Society, of the American Real Estate and Urban Economics Association, and of the Financial Management Association. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with an Israeli historian about the future of Israel.